We're taking a break from fresh episodes for a bit, but instead of leaving you hanging, I'll be republishing the episodes that I think deserve a second listen. I know, we love us some fresh content, but smart ideas are worth hearing twice, because sometimes hearing something again is exactly what will move us from passive listener to actually adding the strategy to our toolkit. So put those earbuds in, pull that pen out, let's make this re-listen actionable. Anna mentioned how adding questions lowers the conversion rate on the registration form, but how that trade-off is one that they are willing to take.
Welcome to Email Swipes, where we peek behind the scenes at the emails that catch your attention and earn their place in your swipe file. Every other week, we'll talk to an email expert about an experiment they ran, and in the following episode, we'll dive into the strategies and methods used in the email so you can inform and inspire your own email work. I'm Nikki Elvas, the copywriter behind winning emails for 8- and 9-figure SaaS and e-commerce brands like Shopify, Four Sigmatic, and Sprout Social. And I know that hearing the background stories to these emails will help you turn pie-in-the-sky insights into plug-and-play actions. Ready to make inspiration tactical? Let's go.
First, a quick recap of the email we discussed last week that we'll be digging into today. Hey, Anna. Just a gentle nudge, because we wouldn't want you to miss out on the chance to add a splash of innovation to your L&D efforts. Wednesday, the 27th of March, at 3 o'clock GMT, 11 o'clock EDT, join us and Charlie Moore from Nestle for a live webinar that's brimming with insights on crafting engaging learning experiences. Brewing Success, Nestle's recipe for impactful learning, is your ticket to discovering how one of the world's leading brands utilizes Powtoon to create captivating training materials. Register now. Hosted by Charlie Moore of Nestle, Max Edwards of Powtoon. Perk up your L&D strategy. Insights directly from Nestle's L&D journey. Success stories to inspire your own training endeavors. Interactive Q&A session with Charlie. Register now. Reserve your spot now and let's brew something great together. Hope to see you there. Max Edwards, Head of Demand Generation. This episode was such a treasure because as much as we email people say, personalize, 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 there are so few brands who actually do it right. And actually, this is one of the reasons that I love getting emails from big brands. I know a lot of email experts are critical of big brands and their email strategies. And there's definitely truth that they send out a lot of promotions and very little nurturing. But there's still so much to learn from them because they have big teams and big budgets. There's just more that they can do, and faster too. For example, the first brands I saw with inbox preview images were the big guys. Now I'm seeing them from D2C brands, but it took a while for them to catch up. And definitely with personalization, the impact a big brand can make with good personalization is huge. It's so worth it for them to use personalization data all the time. On the other hand, because they have so many accounts, things can get a bit vague. They need to be broad enough to be inclusive enough. Here's an example of this. I got an email from Sephora the other day all about how I will love this new product drop. There were two issues with the email. Number one, it was very fake product recommendation algorithm feeling. There were a few lines in there about how, we know you love Lancome, so you'll love this. It was so not the way humans actually talk to each other. A more natural way to say it would be, Lancome has a new product, or one of your favorite brands has a new product, or even, here's a new product we think you'll like. In this case, mentioning why they think I'll like it can actually be detrimental because it's automated. But okay, that's a bit nitpicky. At the end of the day, they are a big company sending me an automated product recommendation, and I'm not really looking for that human relationship with them. What really didn't work about the email was that Lancome has a makeup line and a skincare line. I've only ever bought their makeup from Sephora. They were sending me a recommendation for their skincare. This is not to say that they couldn't recommend skincare to me. If you like a brand for makeup, you might like a brand for skincare. But there was no context like that. There was just an assumption that I will like the new product because I like the brand. Using past purchase data can be a really powerful way to introduce customers to new product lines or even partner brands, but it needs to be handled so differently than a straight up similar product recommendation. So all this brings me to what I really appreciated about the Powtoon strategy. Yes, it's super impressive that they actually use the data that people share. They actually create multiple webinar flows depending on what people are filling out. That's amazing. It seems so rudimentary, but it's so rare. And we'll talk about why in a second. But there's something more than just the fact that they actually use their data. What's really impressive is that they're using the right data. We touched on this briefly in the actual episode when Anna mentioned how she wanted to personalize more deeply, but without getting creepy.
And this is where things get murky for us marketers, because personalization can be anything from first name merge tags to the challenges that the subscriber is looking to solve. And that kind of deeper data, the challenges, that's the stuff that's not going to feel creepy. And more importantly, that's the stuff that won't just get you an open because you're catching someone's attention. That's the kind of open that will get you a conversion because you're giving them what they want. To go back to the Sephora example, Lancome in the subject line caught my attention, but it didn't get my purchase. So takeaway number one, use data to personalize for relevance, not for attention. Okay, so now let's talk a bit about why brands don't personalize, even though it creates such an amazing customer experience. The biggest obstacle is that you need the data to use the data. Collecting customer feedback is like breathing oxygen for some brands. They just do it day in, day out. But like rocketing to Mars for other brands, a whole production and a scary one at that. By the way, that's why I made my customer interview packet. For just $37, it has everything you need to run customer interviews with confidence, email templates, goal setting sheets, checklists, and 114 questions divided by your research goals. Check out the link in the show notes. I love how the Powtoon team looked at data collection. Anna mentioned how adding questions lowers the conversion rate on the registration form, but how that trade-off is one that they are willing to take. It's worth it for them to get fewer committed registrants than more registrants who won't even show up. That data is valuable to them in its own right, and they see how it pays off even in the short term of registrant quality. Another thing to notice, by the way, is that they made those fields optional and they get plenty of responses. So clearly it's not actually impacting things that much. So takeaway number two is to collect data, interviews, reviews, polls, whatever, wherever. It's so critical to understand what your customers need. The next obstacle is finding the right data within the data that you have. Like I mentioned, they're not just using basic data. They're digging into the challenges and using that because that's the powerful stuff. Here, by the way, is where my $43 campaign ideation masterclass comes in. In just 31 minutes, it shows you exactly how to generate endless email ideas from customer reviews. So takeaway number three is to use the right data. Like we mentioned in takeaway number one, you're aiming for relevance, not for attention. Loving these episodes? You'll love my email playbooks. They're chock full of inspirational swipes, and my comments are even color-coded, so you get a super clear breakdown of what works and what doesn't work about each email. Plus, I break down all the nitty-gritties of each flow, so you know exactly what to include and why, without ever giving you cookie-cutter templates that hem in your creativity. In fact, Paul Melrose, who bought the playbook bundle, rated them a 10 and said, "Since using Nikki's playbooks, starting work on an e-commerce email sequence without them would feel like jumping out of a plane without a parachute." And these are not copy and paste solutions either. They work because Nikki gets you to understand the essential concepts at play so you can solve your own or your client's email problems. Big love and appreciation for what she's given us. Check out all 12 email playbooks on offer at nikkielbaz.com/email-playbooks and stop jumping out of a plane without a parachute. Another big obstacle is that it's complex to set up personalized variations. And I'm actually a big believer in not blindly personalizing just because it's a big practice, but making sure that the personalization you're considering is really going to pay off. Like in the case of Powtoon, it totally did, especially since their example isn't even that complicated. Sure, it's a bunch of different webinar flows and it's a bit last minute, but it's not so complex. But sometimes it just doesn't make sense. I had a client once who, for every single email we wrote, wanted a variation that would go to lapsed subscribers. We would include more win-back style language in those variations. And it just didn't make sense. He was paying for all these extra email variations. His internal email person had to spend the time making the extra emails and sending them to that segment. Even reporting was more annoying. And for what? Lapsed subscribers aren't great subscribers. Sure, they have potential, and you can re-engage them and convert them. But their potential is way limited. And it wasn't even like they were getting special offers that would entice them more. It was just slight changes in language, something so subtle. So takeaway number four, weigh the complexity of personalization versus the output and the value it will give you. Last objection, and this one is close to home. A big objection to using data for personalization is that you don't trust the data. Why do I say this is close to home? Well, I have a lot of copywriters and marketers on my email list, right? And that segment of lovely humans loves to get lots of emails, especially to spy on different variations of emails. So when someone tells me they're an e-com founder, are they really? Maybe they just want to get the emails that the e-com founders get. They think that stuff is better than the stuff I share with e-com copywriters. There are ways around this. There's behavioral data. That's always going to be a lot more accurate. But I just kind of default to sending everything to everyone and feeling guilty and barefoot shoemaker about it. Oh well, win some, lose some. So I guess takeaway number 5 is to lean more on behavioral data than on the data that you ask for. All right, now that we cover data objections, let's actually go back to the first thing we talked about in the episode, which was how to improve without seeing metrics. And honestly, email replies is my favorite metric. Don't get me wrong. I love me my metric dashboard. But there is a lot of guesswork. Yeah, they opened, but did they like it? Why didn't they buy? Getting an actual response to an email is so much more enlightening and specific, and it just brings home that whole human connection idea. So it's not really a takeaway, but we'll turn it into one anyway. Number 6, value those replies, read them, respond to them, and use them. Okay, last takeaway. Anna mentioned how Powtoon can get away with templates, but e-com brands can't. And this is something that is so misunderstood. Plain text emails are amazing, and they totally have their place in e-com email strategy. But designed emails do so much. They really showcase the product. They get people wanting the thing. And I think this boils down to the fact that SaaS products are typically solutions, while e-com products are typically delighters. True, a lot of e-com products solve problems, but they're designed to be delighters too. Receiving a physical package in its own right is a delightful sort of transaction. So takeaway number 7, yes, a lot of e-com is discounted, promo-heavy, graphic, no strategy. But just because many brands are leaning too heavily on that doesn't mean those pretty little emails don't have their place. Thanks for geeking out with me about that email story. If you enjoyed either of these episodes, you'll probably enjoy getting my emails. Plus, you'll never miss another episode. Sign up at nikkialbus.com/subscribe. And yes, that link is in the show notes.